already know that the subject today includes the term interface, which is not only a position between and among many religions, spiritual paths, attitudes, but it's also a way of being, in my opinion. I've always been a seeker of something or other, but my search started probably with the passing of my mother. And I always hark back to her because so many of us can say that our mothers were our first teachers. And this year on Easter Sunday will be the 40th anniversary of the passing of my mother. So every Lenten season I go over it and I reprocess and learn more, just as the reprocessing I do is so helpful when I come to the Sterling Study Group and some other places where I go. I go to Hindu temples, I go to a Buddhist temple in Poolsville. I make the rounds, you know, although I came up as a Catholic, I call myself now an expanded Catholic. I embrace some of those things. I do not embrace some of the things that Catholicism offers. I embrace some of Islam, some of Buddhism, and all of the faiths that I can learn about, I embrace some. And I combine it within myself. But when I am attending one or another place, I keep those teachings very special and very focused so that I can feel the intensity and so I can see in my mind at least the end point of every path. I believe that everybody should feel a connection to a path and be willing to take it to the end point, whatever that is, the completion. Maybe it is an initiatic path. I'm involved with one of those, and an inner organ of one where initiation is important. Or maybe it is working up through degrees of study, or maybe accomplishing certain tasks. A 12-step program is very much a path, and I include that with my own studies and awareness. So to go to the big picture and get specific, that's where I'm going with all of this. The big picture has to begin with the Big Bang. Somebody on Facebook quoted something wonderful. I'm sure that a lot of you know what Facebook is. But somebody said, Carl Sagan put it this way. He said, to make an apple pie from scratch, first you have to invent the universe. That's really scratch, man. That is down to the real root of everything. And so in my quest, I had to re-examine some of the spiritual ideas I grew up with. And those ideas included, of course, Catholicism. I started asking a lot of questions about that. And some of you have come from other faith traditions where you have had to ask your questions. And if we don't ask questions, we're not going to get the answers. And my answers are forthcoming, and so are yours. But they're only my answers. And everyone has to re-examine for themselves where they think they're going. As in, where do you think you're going? And who do you think you are? Big questions. Big time questions. So the punctuation mark was, I mentioned the passing of my mother. And I examined her roots and found the right questions to ask. And it's always going to be a list of questions that we have. We're always looking for the place to start. What do we know? And what can we base our path upon? So eventually, I came to the new seminary. Now, there are many faiths. Now, when I mention different faiths, different schools, different mystery schools, different philosophies, I'm only mentioning them in passing. I'm not in a position to recommend anything to anyone. And I found it very helpful to become involved with a movement that has a lot of aspects with New Thought. And I resonated very much with the teachings of Ernest Holmes, very much. And the path I'm very involved with is called the Rosicrucian Order, AMORC, A-M-O-R-C. However, it's one of a number of schools with that word, Rosicrucian. Just as Christian, there are many denominations of Christianity, there are many such schools that use the word Rosicrucian. And Ernest Holmes' teachings fit very well within those ideas. When you have your own big picture, then you find that a lot of other things fit into your big picture. And everything becomes a big umbrella under which we can study
and meditate and groove and enjoy our lives a little bit more. And actually, that is really the main goal for everyone, is to get more enjoyment on our personal path, be more well-oiled among our interpersonal relationships, to grow, to take on new interests. I'm big on that myself. As a musician, I'm always looking for another frontier. And I found a couple of people to improvise with. We're doing free improvisation together every Wednesday morning. So that's like entering a field of spirituality too. So the term interfaith for me has meant that I gravitated to the new seminary, and Dennis as well graduated. It was a program in which we all study the different world faiths, all of the major faiths, and lots of little ones, to see where our own center line is. And we all prepared our ministers' manuals. We wrote our own manuals to with which to do our craft. And it enables us to do weddings. We've each done a bunch. And bringing people together, that's the big aspect for me. And as my ministry is unfolding, the biggest thing, the biggest duty I have, the biggest mission I have, is to listen in on conversations that people are having with each other and with themselves, and listening to the big question marks that they have. And then my role is to ask more questions, to see how people can better fit together. And when we look at the headlines, I think everybody, regardless of your path, I think we all would agree, one of the biggest needs in the world is for people to do more listening and to really see what people mean by terms like confession and reconciliation. What do we mean by jihad? What is the greater jihad and the lesser jihad? How many of you didn't know that there are two, a greater and a lesser? Well, you better go do some reading. The lesser jihad is a Muslim wanting to be a better Muslim. The greater jihad is making the faith stronger. I didn't say anything about killing or destroying non-believers. So there's one step. Let's look at all the terms, not only within the Muslim faith, but all of the other faiths. When I hear the song occasionally, very occasionally, Onward Christian Soldiers Marching As If to War or something like that, nobody thinks that Christians are going to war to kill non-Christians. That's the last thing on your mind. We march because, you know, we want to be better Christians. Well, what did Jesus believe? Let's go back earlier than that. Go back before the churches. Go back before the mosques. You know, the Baha'i faith and the Sikh faith and Buddhism, they were founded by Hindus. So let's go back there. What came before Hinduism? What are the roots? What did the mystics do to look for the divine? How did they do it? How did Jesus and Moses do it? How did Muhammad do it? What did they do? That's where I'm going. I want to know what they did, and I want to do those things. I don't have a church. I'm not interested in buying paper towels and having an administrator. You know, all that. Can't do it. Can't do it. But what I can do is attempt to be a catalyst among people. So the interfaith path for me means attempting to be a better catalyst to help people understand each other a little bit and help them to formulate their questions about their faith. And that's the essence of what being an interfaith minister means to me. And maybe Dennis, how about you taking a turn?
Sure.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
My path began in Southern Virginia, in Harrisonburg. I was raised on the periphery of the Mennonite community, the Mennonite Brethren. And I've attended all kinds of different churches in my life and been active in quite a few of them. I have... And I was dedicated to them all, you know, in the same way. I mean, as I am to the interfaith path today. But there comes a point with me and everything where it's just not enough, you know. It was like I was the Christian. I was out there handing out the pamphlets on the on the sidewalk. I was doing, you know, witnessing and all this kind of stuff to people, but it wasn't enough. It was never enough. And so I've always been a seeker. I've always been a seeker. And it's like, so I would start doing other things. I would go to other things, and I tried metaphysics, you know, all of the different kinds of tarot cards and psychic readings and all this stuff, and they're wonderful. I have I had a great time with them, and I learned a lot about myself in that respect. So then I went through a phase where I was just like, I'm not going to be religious at all. I'm going to be a heathen. And a lot of people still think I am. And that's fine. But for me, I found through some really good friends of mine in Charlottesville, PMH Atwater and her husband Terry, I found Science of Mind. And Science of Mind became, it took me a long time to go to the church, but one Sunday morning I just said, oh, what the hell, I'm going to Science of Mind church today. And I went, and I stayed for a while. And I took some of the classes and stuff and learned all about the different aspects and principles of Science of Mind. And then I got fed up with that. It's like, oh, I've had enough of this, the church and all this churchy stuff and all this like fighting and bickering and, you know, not living the principles and what was, you know, being very judgmental, of course. That's okay. It's all righteous judgment. My righteous judgment.
Good one.
So, anyway, I said to myself, well, either this stuff works or it doesn't work. Either the Science of Mind principles work or it doesn't work. And so I decided I was going to go away and practice the principles of Science of Mind unattached to any organization. And that's the wonderful thing about Science of Mind, is that you can learn this stuff, learn the principles of Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, who was, in my humble opinion, the ultimate interfaith minister. Ernest Holmes took from every major religion. He was always a seeker. He delved into Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, all of them, all the isms. And he wanted to identify their commonality. And so he took all of those things, all of those aspects of every major religion, and he turned it into Science of Mind. So Science of Mind is, to me, the ultimate, is an interfaith religion, because we'll take everybody. We don't care who you are. You can be a pagan nudist out in the middle of the field and everything, and howling at the moon, and Science of Mind will take you. You can be a Christian fundamentalist, and Science of Mind will take you. You can be Catholic, you know, Jewish, whatever. It doesn't matter. So, anyway, if we take these principles and stuff and turn them into a religion. So then I was thinking, all at once one day, I woke up and I had this, you know, you ever have the proverbial voice in your head that says, do this, now is the time to do this. I woke up one morning, the birds were chirping, the breeze was coming through the bedroom window, and the sun was coming through, and all at once I heard, it's time to go to ministerial school. Mm-hmm. Now, the year before, I had been invited by the Science of Mind, one of the satellite campuses. They wrote me a letter and said, inviting me to apply to ministerial school. I mean, I got the letter. I still have it somewhere. I couldn't believe it. And it was a personal letter written by somebody. I can't remember who the minister was. So anyway, but it wasn't time. I wasn't quite ready. Then one morning, I heard the voice, it's time to go to ministerial school. And so I thought, okay, God, if I'm to go to ministerial school, it needs to be easy, effortless, and I need a billboard of a sign. Well, I got that in the form of the Science of Mind magazine. One day when I opened it up, there was Reverend John Monday, who was one of the founding members of the new seminary, and whom I have known personally. He was talking about his walk with cancer and how he cured himself of cancer and, you know, and all this and his faith. And he is a member of the Course in Miracles community. He's really big into a Course in Miracles. And as a matter of fact, I think he's doing a workshop here in the area sometime soon. And so I thought, wow, if John went to the new seminary, then why can't I go to the new seminary? So I applied. Then I found out that John is in his second year. And it's like, oh boy, this is getting better and better all along, you know. So I went, and I just absolutely loved it. I loved the fact that we got to learn about all the different religions, and I loved going to New York every month for a weekend, and I loved all of my instructors, and, you know, after 9/11, we had the thing with the you know, where they brought the towers down and everything, but we had, I can't remember his name, the guy who is trying to build the mosque.
The imam.
What's his name?
Oh, I do not, I don't know.
Anyway, he was one of our instructors, our lecturers for that weekend, and I have to say, after 9/11, I was afraid to go to a mosque. I was afraid. I was a big old wuss, and he came, and I saw such an incredible amount of love and compassion in one human being, and acceptance. And it just, all that fear just melted away. And so I've been able to go to a mosque since and pray with people in a mosque, and it's just been a beautiful experience. Ernest Holmes said, there is one God, and then there's many paths to that God. Well, that's a quote. I think he said that, but it's a quote that's attributed to him. And the new seminary, our quote was, our motto is, never instead of, always in addition to. So, John said we learned about where we are and who we are. I want to learn what I am. I want to learn that more and more. I'm going to pass back to John.
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis. All of that well put, well taken. The path is never ending. The path, you've probably all heard this before, that's the destination. Mm-hmm. To feel that we're on a path actively looking, actively absorbing, and applying, that's the big one. Once we have the knowledge, you know, I have an ocean of books in my home, but have I absorbed any of it? Sometimes I wonder if I've absorbed any of it at all. And it's a very worthwhile thing to note the speaker on Islam, the gentleman who, I don't know his name. Maybe it doesn't matter for this thought, though, but that he was, that he displayed a lot of love.
Wow,
Islam
is his last name.
Is a path of love, and peace, specifically peace. Salam. You know, the Christians of that part of the world in North Africa, they say salam. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you. And they're Christians too. They describe, I feel like I'm defending the Muslim faith, and I don't want to be doing that at all. They don't need any defense from anybody. Nobody needs any defense. You know, once we're solid on a path, we can support that path. And we don't have to feel defensive about it. But when they talk about Jesus, they say, peace be upon him. And when you see PBUH in some of the translations of Islamic writing, that's what it means, peace be upon him. So when they say Muhammad, the name, they say, peace be upon him. Or when they say Jesus, they say, peace be upon him. And they respect Jesus too. He's mentioned 28 times in the Quran. Mary, the mother of a prophet, she is honored too. She's mentioned about 9 times in the Quran. The point being that there's so much overlapping, we almost can't help but acknowledge that there's value in every path. Every path. You can look at the basic tenets. You can look at a book that I think you also used by John Huston, Huston, The World's Religions. Very good, good reading. Really wonderful reading. Saying that there's so much overlap that we cannot really extricate ourselves from any faith completely, because there's so much overlapping. And for now, I don't know how much more I can say without going back over my own words. But yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Some thoughts about cosmology. You know, there's some wonderful programming on the on cable TV now. The Science Channel has some wonderful videos about cosmology. And in an effort to understand my own faith path and my own ancient faith traditions, I also have to pay attention to cosmology, where all of this came from. And some very basic ideas can resonate very well with our faith path. For instance, the idea that the universe, as we know it, was once the size of an atom, and that everything we have now, all of the galaxies we know, and there are billions of galaxies, those all were originally the size of an atom. And all of that exploded, and it's still expanding. It's still expanding. That idea, if we have a theory of everything, it's going to have to include all of science. It will have to include our mental processes, because a theory of everything means everything. Everything means everything. So it's got to include all of that, all of the people, everything we think about, and it will have to be a formulaic path that will be embraced by this theory of everything, which is going to be a mathematical formula. So science has to be in there too. There, now I'm finished.
There was a little I was thinking about something John just said and about defending Christians and Muslims and everything, and the thought just popped into my head that we're all cousins. All of these religions are all cousins. Whenever there is an argument or a disagreement in the world, it's like you're having a disagreement with your cousin. Mm-hmm. I mean, here, you know, science. Who's the scientist who's gone back and done all of the I can't remember his name. He was the one who was arrested on his front porch, and name leaves me. Anyway, they've been able to go back and identify the first people, where we're all descended from, the first people, a little tiny tribe in Africa. And if you think about that aspect of it and how we're all descendants of those people, we're cousins. And it's the same thing with religion. We're all cousins. Some of the religion, like some of the, when Jesus's guys, you know, I call them the boys. The boys went when Jesus decided that he had enough of this, and he was like, he was heading back to source. The boys went out in every direction. Some of them went east and some of them went west. Well, the ones that went west started preaching about Jesus and all this kind of and telling the stories of Jesus, and they meshed with the Muslims. They went as far as we can identify that they went to China. And they became involved with the Buddhist and the Taoist. There is a wonderful book, if you ever get a chance. It's out of print, but it's called the Jesus Sutras. They've been able to find the stones on which is carved the writings of Thomas, the one who went to the east, and he talks about they talk about the teachings of Jesus, but they're all sort of enmeshed in the Taoist and the Buddhist way. They're beautiful. They're beautiful. And so I guess what I wanted to say is that we're all everything. I mean, we're just everything. I am a Christian. I am a Jew. I am a Muslim. I am a Buddhist. I'm a Hinduist. I'm a Rosicrucian. Mm-hmm. I'm all of it. And so are you. Because you have accepted the principles of science of mind. We're all these things. And I'm going to pass back
May
to John.
May I ask a question? Maybe sure. Lead you a little bit. Will you talk about the impact of mysticism in multiple faiths?
Oh, yes.
God, we could talk about that for hours.
We have about 6 minutes.
Oh, wow. When I think of mysticism, I think of... because I was just thinking about this week. On my desk, I have pictures of Sai Baba, the Sai Baba who's living now in India, who is a mystic, who can actually materialize things out of thin air. I have him on tape somewhere at home. I have Saint Teresa, the little flower. I have Amma, who is an incredible mystic, who is illiterate, who comes and sits in the middle of a floor somewhere and sings her little hymns, and people give her millions and millions of dollars to do good stuff. I mean, and she's just the epitome of love. I have Ernest Holmes, and I have the Dalai Lama, who I think is an incredible mystic, who has, in the face of adversity, just said, you know, is holding true to his belief system and everything. And so, it's all mystical. I'm a mystic. Mm-hmm. Every time that I perceive God, whether it be with the woman playing with a dog out here on the lawn, or looking at a daffodil that has just come up out of my yard as if by magic, that's the mystical part of it for me. That's the mystery. And it's a privilege to be a part of the mystery of the mysticism. Mm.
The idea of mysticism, or being a mystic, means that we're looking inside ourselves. Mm-hmm. Through meditation, introspection, rather than looking to a minister, a priest, a rabbi, an imam, a shaman. Those people are very helpful, and they are parts of their organizations. Those are great starting places, but eventually we have to go back inside ourselves anyway. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, is the idea of mysticism, going inside ourselves. And going inside ourselves, you know, to coordinate with the physical realm also, it can't be all spirit, because we have little chemical reactions in the mind that are making all these thoughts possible for us to cross over into different parts of the brain. That's a scientific thing. When we look at the composition of the body, when we look inside ourselves, we have the same kinds of mysteries that are outside beyond us. The black hole, there's probably the equivalent of the black hole within us. Other solar systems? Well, we have atoms that are much like solar systems. And we're part of that Big Bang. All of the atoms that are in us now were part of that. The earliest atoms formed were hydrogen and helium and lithium. And when we have water in this coffee, that is some of the oldest stuff in the universe. We are 75% water. And that hydrogen, that's some of the oldest. So we are very old. We are going to be older and older. And to connect with our aspects of longevity, of living forever, immortality, those ideas are connected with the smallest units in the body. The smallest. So thinking and meditating on a molecular level, on the level of DNA, that is science, and that is mystical science, and that's going to connect us with the great mysteries, in my opinion, only. 2 more minutes.
The Native Americans believe that we carry with us, and this is proof that we are eternal to me, we carry with us back 7 generations the DNA, the actual DNA of our ancestors. Mm. And every time that we make a decision to heal something within ourselves or within our world, we have healed everything that's gone before. That's the mysticism. That's the beautiful part. That's the mystery to me, is that I can choose to heal within myself the propensity to abuse. And I have healed everything that's ever been abused in the past. It's a great responsibility. It's a great mystery.
May I ask a question? Where did you get the figure that we have 7 generations of DNA?
Heather Principe. Yeah. Gave it to us when she did our Native American. We have this wonderful Native American shaman who works with the seminary, and she actually came in and laid out the stones.
So that's a Native American idea?
Mm-hmm. And I really had a mystical experience with that experience, and I was asking all these questions, and she would always say, "Aho."
Oh. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So it's always yes. And that's the thing. The universe always says yes when you want to grow and expand. I just had a mystical experience in here. I don't know about anybody else, but when my mystical experiences happen, I hear bells and whistles and I see sparkles everywhere, and I had a mystical experience just now. It actually sends chills up my spine, but that's a part of being connected to Source. That's how you know when you're driving along and you are standing in front of your kitchen sink doing dishes and all that kind of stuff. I'm sorry, I see you guys in a whole different light just now.
Are you seeing 7 generations back?
Always. Always. Actually, I just saw myself doing something different. That was really interesting. Years ago I had this dream where I was sitting under the Brooklyn Bridge with this guru. And we had all these people around in a circle, and I realized, well, that was part of going to the new seminary. And then I reconnected with that, and I saw how the guru told us to go out now, after we got our teaching, he told us to go out and form our own circles, and I just saw that this was one of those circles. And it was just... And that was years ago. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. Nice. Anyway, I have no more to say. I am complete.
Thank you.
John, I'm complete too.